You're listening to Cinematic Adventures, proud member of the Misfit Faction Media Network.
Good morning, Vietnam!
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
I feel the need for speed.
Roads, we're going, we don't need roads.
Snakes, why did it have to be snakes?
Vices? We don't need no vices. I don't have to show you any stinking vices.
You make me want to be a better man.
Nobody puts baby in a corner.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Love means never having to say you're sorry.
He's looking at you, kid.
Not bad. I'm just drawn that way.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Cinematic Adventures. If you're listening to us on the go, you can catch us on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and pretty much anywhere else you can listen to podcasts. I am one of your hosts. My name is Sean. I'm here in the studio with Paul. Paul, how are you today?
Yeah,
that sounds about right.
Mildly disappointed.
Why?
Because I loved this book, but did not care as much for the movie.
Well, folks, we know where this episode's going.
Yep, too
bad. Paul's in a mood.
I am in a mood.
You're always in a mood.
Professor Moody, even.
Like we did there. Well, if we haven't gotten it from Paul's lackadaisy attitude, we are in our fourth week of our Harry Potter foreverness, and we are talking about Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire.
Harry, just put your name in the Goblet of Fire.
That's one, folks. We'll see how many more times he does that in this episode.
It's the most memeable thing ever.
So, Paul.
Yes, Sean.
Initial thoughts on Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, the movie.
The movie.
Or you want to actually, let me...
You want to do the book first?
Start with the book.
Okay, so this was my favorite book for most of the series. That has shifted over the years, but at the time of reading, like, Goblet of Fire was my favorite. I liked it better than the first three. Mm-hmm. I still do, and I'll put that on. I will always say that this is the movie where the entire tone of the series really shifts. Harry's very isolated and alone for the majority of this movie. This is like the start of the Harry Potter ostracizing that only gets worse in the next book with the Order of the Phoenix. And then eventually they start to realize that he was telling the truth with Half-Blood Prince and then Deathly Hallows. But this was like where the books and the movies really started to differentiate.
Yeah.
And they were limited by certain aspects. And we're going to talk about, especially when we get to the differences between the books and the movies, because there are things that they could have omitted from the movie to do more with the stuff from the books. Just like an example, the dragon fight scene is very long.
Yeah, in the book, it's really not
It's not that long.
No, not at all.
And, you know, obviously there's spectacle to it. However, they took out the entire maze.
Yeah.
Like, the maze is just a maze.
Mm-hmm.
That's not scary. I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then give up halfway through, like, floor. Shoot the red sparks up.
I'm out.
Tap out. But there are certain aspects of this that really suffer for, because it's a movie and they are limited by time and by screenplay adaptations. There's plenty that they have to cut out, but I really love the book and I still love the book and I can open it and enjoy it. But this movie, especially their hair.
Oh God.
There's so much hair in this
movie.
There's
a lot of hair in this movie.
Apparently all of them were typically, they would film and then they would, you know, take a couple of weeks off just because they were kids and they aren't allowed to work all year like that. But and they would, you know, get haircuts, do this. And I believe, who is it? Yates took over as this one?
This is Mike Newell.
So they told them not to cut their hair in between. And then they would cut it when they got there. And they're like, no, we changed our minds. Just keep your hair like that. That's why Harry and Ron are like.
Yeah, they got.
All hair.
Yeah.
A lot of hair going
on. I remember those days.
Those were the days.
I remember those days when it just did not get a haircut. It just looked really bad.
Oh my God, it is rough. But yeah. Those are my initial thoughts.
So for me, I agree with you. When I read the book for the first time, it was obviously the longest book to date. It doubles the size of Prisoner of Azkaban. And when you think about what Prisoner of Azkaban almost doubled with the size of the first two books were. So there was so much in this book to digest. There were so many new characters. You know, it's obviously Mad-Eye Moody is a big one. Voldemort. We finally see Voldemort come back to life. You know, the whole Triwizard tournament was just such a wonderful storyline in the book. You know, really laid out, you know, with the different schools coming to participate in it. Going to the Quidditch World Cup in the beginning of the book was a great stuff in the book. And it just was, you know, I can't even explain. Like, just, it was very well done book-wise. I really enjoyed it. And you knew reading it, I was like, okay, a lot of this is not making it into the movie. because it's just, there's no way. Mm-hmm. There's no way they can do it. Fun fact, they actually thought about doing two movies for this book.
I could see it.
Yeah.
Like you do like the first two trials and then you like the whole last sort of the book or the movie and book could be a whole thing.
I know. And when you look back on it, could they have done it? Yeah, they could have.
I just feel like it would have set the precedent, and then suddenly
all of them would have.
We would have had Deathly Hallows would have been three parts.
Probably would have been three parts. Yeah, obviously, Order of the Phoenix would have been two parts. Half-Blood Prince would have been two parts. I mean, it would have just. I don't think the actors would have stuck around, probably.
not as many of them, no. But the kids, knows? Probably.
I don't even know about that. I think by the end, they were pretty much
they
done.
Were burnt out.
They
yeah.
were burnt out. But,
and they were in their mansions, mm-hmm. just bathing in money. Okay.
So, as we said in our last episode, we've hit the point in the movies where the movies were coming out basically in a year and a half intervals. So, the first two movies were, you know, a year apart. Then Prisoner of Azkaban came out 18 months after Chamber, and then this came out 18 months after Prisoner. It was, the tone of the movie is obviously, you know, much more darker, because the book is, obviously, as well. You definitely sense that what they did in the third movie is not here in the fourth movie, I feel like. You know, the change in director was really a big factor in the way this movie looked and the way it kind of, you know.
This movie went. had a very green film to it.
It was very dark. It wasn't a light movie.
And it's not supposed to be. This is, like, even though Prisoner of Azkaban is a darker movie,
there was still some, you know.
It still had, like, its lighthearted moments and, mm-hmm. you know, stuff like that. Like when Harry pretends to be a ghost.
But this is also the first movie where they really have conflict with each other.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Ron and Harry, like, don't talk for chapters because Ron is just, he's tired of it. He's tired of Harry, just everything happening to Harry. Everything good's happening to Harry. You know, and it was the first time you really saw the conflict between the two of them. And obviously, Hermione's stuck in the middle.
And it was in the actual movie, which was very different than the previous movie where the conflict was between the two boys and Hermione.
Mm-hmm.
So it was definitely a little bit more interesting to actually see this and see Ron, who is arguably, like, I know Ron gets a lot of hate for some reason. He's, like, one of the best characters. Like, he is the most loyal, mm-hmm. steadfast, and... He's the audience surrogate, not Harry.
No.
He is the person that the audience can relate to, but also argue with, like, well, I wouldn't do that. You better believe that halfway through that Horcrux journey in the last book, you'd probably deuce out too, be like, all right, we're out. I can't. But to be in the shadow of not only Harry, but also his entire family, like, that's tough.
And it's just because you sat next to someone on a train. That's all that started it all, you know? And it's just... From book one to now book four, everything between the money, between, you know, getting the Nimbus 2000, now the Firebolt, being the seeker of the Quidditch team, because this is obviously before Ron joins the Quidditch team as the new keeper. You know, it's just like, it's like enough.
Yeah.
Dude, everything good is happening to you.
And then,
but also everything bad is happening to you. So it's like, that's where you kind of get annoyed with Ron. It's like, dude, do you not see what he's been dealing with?
But also, let's not forget, Ron has not been present for all the bad stuff.
That's true.
In the first movie, he gets knocked out, during Wizard's Chess.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't see that final conflict. Chamber of Secrets, he's not down there. He just knows that Harry saved his sister.
Yeah.
And he's stuck with...
Gilderoy Lockhart.
And then in the third movie, he's laid up in the hospital wing.
That's true. You're right.
Even though he's been present for Harry's journey, he always was brought along. So he got to live that excitement. It's in this movie where Harry's like, I didn't do this. And he's like, I don't believe you. You do everything. and I get Ron's reaction in this book and in this movie. And even though it, like, sucks to watch,
mm-hmm.
you know, because you're like, oh, man, be friends again. Love each other.
Yeah.
It's good storytelling.
No, it definitely is. And it's also not so much movie-wise, but in the book, this is the coming out of Hermione.
Yes.
I mean, not so much in the movies because, you know, Emma Watson, they really didn't make her look... ugly at any point in the book. In the movies.
She matched Hermione in personality and then not as much in looks, but mm-hmm. really it's her hair. That was like her, like the
that
big
was
bushy
the big
hair.
Thing. Yeah.
But like they never really brought attention to her teeth or anything mm-hmm. like that. And that's a big thing in this one.
Yeah.
Where that's like part of her
transformation.
And it's the one where Ron actually stands up to Professor Snape about it.
That's right.
Because Malfoy, I think it's Malfoy or one of them, one of the Slytherins hits her in the face with a charm and her teeth grow. And he's like, look what they did. And Snape's like, I don't see a difference. Oof. Imagine Alan Rickman dropping. Is this the one where he hits them in the back of the head?
It could be.
In the Great Hall. I want to say, because I see all the hair.
I think it is, yeah.
Yeah, this is... Apparently, they were just laughing the whole time when, you know, Alan Rickman was just coming over and smacking them.
Very. Well, if you get Alan Rickman to smack you in the head, I'd be laughing, too.
The best is when he rolls up his sleeves. I can't. He does it with that Snape look, too. Well, now you know one of our favorite scenes in this movie.
Oh, whoops. Yeah. So,
mild spoiler.
So, those are our initial thoughts on the book version of Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. In terms of cast, obviously, you know, as we've said in the previous episodes, we really don't focus on the returning cast members. We're going to focus on the new additions to the franchise cast, and the two big ones,
big
obviously
ones.
Huge. Thank you. Brendan Gleeson as Alistair Mad-Eye Moody, and he's now the fourth Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher in four books.
Yes.
And he is a former...
Aura.
Basically a gunslinger with a wand is what he's called, but was it the aura?
Aura, yeah. So like a magical policeman.
Gotcha.
So he would hunt down dark wizards.
Dark wizards. And then obviously the next big one is Lord Voldemort, and it's played brilliantly by Ralph Fiennes.
I have some qualms.
You do?
Mild qualms.
With the look or with...
The look.
The look.
Yeah, the look. Okay. I think he looks his best when he first forms, and he's like very like almost like skeletal. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's an effect that was added to his face. But like when he first like stands up, and he's like kind of catching himself, he looks very different because the effects are still going on. Mm-hmm. Also, put on some shoes, man.
Your focus.
Cut them toenails. He puts his face on Batman, or his foot on Batman's face.
That's true.
Oh, such a handsome boy, and he's just got his face like, and, you know, Robert Pattinson's like, oh god.
Well, he was dead.
I know, but in real life, he's like, oh, in real life,
he's probably going like, I got Ralph Fiennes' foot on my face. This is
almost as good.
I'm an actor.
This is almost as good as playing Batman.
Who would have thought? 18 years later, that guy is Batman.
A freaking Hufflepuff.
Wow.
Yeah, our friend Joe's a Hufflepuff.
So overall, though, what did you think of Ralph Fiennes as Voldemort?
So we only really get him in one scene.
We only get him in one scene, but it's worth the wait.
I will argue it is his best scene as Voldemort, or at least top three.
Okay.
That first scene of him appearing and then taunting Harry.
Because
the only time we had seen Voldemort was in the first movie, and then we saw a young Tom Riddle.
Yeah.
So our imaginations were all going a trillion miles an hour. He doesn't look as book accurate.
Mm-hmm.
There are some slight differences, but in all honesty, I think they do a great job. He has his own unique flair to his style, like how he holds his wand. Like he holds it with his palm up, mm-hmm. and it's kind of like resting in his hand, almost like it's too good for him. But the whole scene of him turning from like the fetus looking thing to him,
yeah.
and then just tormenting his own Death Eaters and then torturing Harry, it's a great scene.
Yeah. When they initially announced that they cast Ralph Fiennes as Voldemort, I was... There's a part of you going like, oh, really? Okay. You know,
all right.
Interesting. Again, I was like, how is he going to look? You know, because obviously, as you just said, it's different in the movie than it is in the book. They went much more snake-like, I believe, in the movie. You know, obviously, with the no nose, he's just got like the two slits on his face to kind of, you know, mask a snake and stuff like that. It looks nothing like, you know, the face we saw in Sorcerer's Stone, obviously.
Yeah, because it was just the back of his head.
It's just the back of his head, but, you know, I really did think he did a great job. And it was, and obviously he comes back in the following movies, and I think in each movie he grows more in the character.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it's just, but it's still a haunting scene in this one.
Oh, it is not pleasant.
Because between the death of Cedric Diggory, between, you know, all the death that the Death Eaters showing up and him trying to escape. And then obviously it really is. It was a powerful scene. It was really, really well done.
What a terrible plan, though.
Yeah.
By Moody. I feel like he could have done better.
Probably.
Oh, by the way, spoiler. Evil Moody.
Evil Moody. Yeah.
Fake Moody.
Fake Moody.
Moody.
Those are the two big cast additions, but obviously we have a few smaller ones. Obviously, as we just said, Robert Pattinson, who was unknown at the time, he is playing Cedric Diggory. He actually replaced a stunt performer actor who appeared in Prisoner of Azkaban, because that's
the Quidditch player.
Cedric Diggory was struck by lightning in the Quidditch scene.
They took that out too, where Cedric was supposed to argue the victory mm-hmm. in that Quidditch match. Cedric Diggory has a lot more, because he felt that it wasn't fair that because he catches the snitch after yeah. Harry passes out, and he's like, well, that's not fair, like the Dementors showed up, like that's outside of, so in the books he's very different. Hufflepuffs get a bad rep.
Really?
They're considered like the almost like the stoners of Hogwarts.
Okay.
But they just tend to be a little bit more open and accommodating and just be a little bit more relaxed. Not so much. What is it? I saw a meme that it was like, all right, we're thinking about making a school. One's brave, cool kids. One's book nerds. One's lazy stoners. And one's like just evil. School board's like, tell us more.
Okay.
All right, let's do this. Let's see what we got.
Imagine they had that in a school nowadays.
But yeah. Then we have a whole new set of schools that are introduced.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And we didn't even mention that Barty Crouch, played by
David Tennant.
This was before he was like big.
This is right before he was cast as Doctor Who.
And he's great in it.
He's good. He doesn't have enough to do.
Does not.
Because obviously, except for the scene where he, you know, summons the Death Mark in the sky, and then the ending scene, he is technically in the body of Brendan Gleeson, and Brendan Gleeson's doing all that stuff. So
yeah, what did you think of the tell? That, like, the lick?
Oh, the
he's
lick?
Like...
I liked it, because I don't think that was in the book.
It was not.
No, so it was interesting, because again, movie-wise, you had to find something where the father would recognize that it was his son.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like they definitely took the character, because in the book... Barty Crouch Jr. was portrayed as sort of this, you know, boy who was just swayed the wrong way, you know, and was involved in obviously the torture of the Longbottoms, and he kind of just, you know, it was like, oh, he's not that bad, but in the movie, he's just like just pure evil.
Yeah,
I mean, there is no, you know. Remorse at all in Barty Crouch Jr. In the book, he's like crying in the courtroom. He's apologizing. I mean, it's probably an act. I get it, but they really did not go anywhere near that.
Yeah.
But again,
they needed something to.
Yeah. And David Tennant, again, this is before David Tennant really became big, you know, Doctor Who and
Jessica Jones.
Jessica Jones and Broadchurch. I mean, he, for the few scenes he's in, he was really good.
Speaking of a few scenes, Gary Oldman was apparently in this movie.
Yes, he was.
They condensed all of his scenes into one.
One.
All of the lines from the book he uses in one
scene.
See, have you noted? See, this is my problem with different directors coming in, mm-hmm. right? Every time. So he appears in the fireplace in two different movies.
Mm-hmm.
Both times are radically different.
Yeah.
So in this one, like the fire, like the ember kind of
face
pops up.
Yeah, it's like
three-dimensionally.
It looks like lava, like, you know.
So it's not even Gary Oldman. It's like, Gary, can you just stand in front of the screen for 4 minutes and we'll pay you, you know, $3 million?
Okay. Sure.
Well, it's like Robert Downey Jr. getting paid like for Spider-Man Homecoming, which he's barely in.
Yeah.
He made like... They equated it to how much he made per screen time, and it's like something stupidly ridiculous. But then, I think the next movie, he appears in the fire again, but it's like his silhouette and face in the fire. It's very strange. But that's the problem you have when directors change. You know, people change behind the scenes, styles change, and this is definitely one of the. Say what you will about the MCU. Their consistency with how things look
true.
Is usually pretty good.
It also could be. Just saying, maybe Gary Oldman wasn't available to do a lot for this movie. So they were like, okay, let's just condense you into one scene and there you go.
Totally possible.
I think he might have been filming Batman Begins at the same time as this movie because they both came out in 2005.
Yeah.
So it's possible he might have been off doing that. Again, I can't swear to that. I think your idea is definitely probably more plausible. But, you know, again, it's the problem with... These books are just so large, and the movies, you got to condense them, so, like, certain characters are going to get just shafted, and I think one of them is Rita Skeeter.
Oh, we'll talk about that. But
Miranda Richardson, I thought she was great. She had nothing to do in the movie.
Well, it's funny because, like, you also have to look at it cinematically, right? So, as great as the scenes of Harry talking to Sirius in the book are, because they, you know, they flow with the literature... Do I need every other, like every 5 minutes, do I need another scene of him talking to Sirius?
Mm-hmm.
It disrupts the flow of the movie. So I understand, again, that's the problem. Some things just don't translate well from book to movie, page to film. And, you know, sometimes they overdo it. Like, as much as I love Zack Snyder, Watchmen is a tough watch because it is literally, we took the page and made it into a movie. And while it's beautifully done and, like, the cinema is great on it, that is not a movie I could ever just pop in and watch on a whim. Especially because every time there's a sex scene or naked Dr. Manhattan, somebody walks in the room.
Oh, yeah.
Always.
What are you watching? No, nothing.
Why is that guy blue? And why is it huge? Yeah, you know what? There's no...
I like huge blues.
Da-ba-dee-da-ba-da. But, so, you know, I get it, but when we talk about, you know, Rita Skeeter, I'm going to talk about differences between the book and the film. Rita Skeeter gets shafted. Mm,
big time. It is,
like, wild.
Yeah.
But, yeah, any other new staff member? Well, we got to talk about Crum and Vic and...
Crum and Fleur, Odelacour, and Victor Crum were the two other...
Triwizard
participants. Crum from... Durmstrang and Fleur from, where's Fleur
Bobach?
From? Bobach? Bobatons.
Yeah, something like that. Bobatons. It's French.
Yeah, sure. And then obviously this is the first appearance of Cho Chang in the movies.
Yes.
In the book, we see her, we read about her in Prisoner of Azkaban.
This was also the film where you remembered being a teenager. Like him, the awkwardness of trying to ask somebody to a dance.
Mm, yes.
Why do they always move around in packs?
That was, yeah, you're right. No, this is probably, yeah, this is, they're supposed to be 14, 15 years old.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is their freshman, sophomore, high school-ish time. And you know, yeah, they're.
It's tough.
Figuring things out.
Oh, man, and they do not. And they, oh, God, the amount of times they have their foot in their mouths is...
Especially at the dance.
Especially Ron. Ron is the worst in this. But, or the best is when Harry looks over at Cho during breakfast and he goes to smile and all, like, I think he was drinking something, it all just comes out. Nothing can relate more to high school than something like that. Just that pure panic of just, oh, my God, what did I just do?
So... Obviously, Chris Columbus directed the first two movies, and he is very well known for doing well with kids.
Right.
Then Alfonso Cuarón comes on, and he really takes these kids and puts them into a teenage, you know, young teenager vibe. Mike Newell comes in, and he's tackling what possibly could be the toughest, you know, time in their lives, technically, as we're just talking about, like, you know, they're 14, 15 years old. They're really starting to get into, you know, girls, and Hermione is changing and all that. What did you think of the way they handled all that in the movie?
I thought they did a good job. Again, they nailed the awkwardness of that, of those teenage years, because this is the first time you're really dealing with it. And the idea of liking girls and or liking boys and relationships and how complicated they are. Victor Crumb was not a bad guy.
No.
But you still didn't want him to get with Hermione. Like, you got invested in all these things. And I think that they do a good job conveying that and conveying the awkwardness, and especially for Hermione, who's like, I'm not gonna be second choice. Mm-hmm. Like, what do you, and then, you know, obviously you see one of the best scenes or most powerful scenes is when she's sitting on the stairs crying and you see other girls sitting around crying and like people are just upset. That's a dance, man. Like that is high school drama, because this is high school.
Yeah.
We tend to forget that because we don't often see them taking classes. How do they graduate? Jeez.
There's nothing else happens. They don't take class
at all.
Because is it this year they do the owls? Is that Goblet of Fire?
I think year five.
That's year five?
Yeah, they don't do the owls in the Goblet. Okay. I don't remember often.
Well, because Goblet of Fire is basically all the Triwizard. It's the Triwizard tournament. Is like, that is the book.
First movie with no Quidditch.
That's right.
And first book with no Quidditch.
First book with no Quidditch, yeah. Because they tell you right at the beginning of the book, we're not doing Quidditch this year. You know why? Because of this.
Yeah. It's funny. Hogwarts Legacy took out Quidditch. Mm-hmm. Like, that was not something. And they make a reason for it in-game. And people are like, I want Quidditch. I've flown on a broom in Hogwarts Legacy. I'm glad there's no Quidditch. The controls are tough. Like, it is not easy.
Fingers hurt.
Not even that. It's just, it's very, like... You move,
mm-hmm.
and it's very fast-paced, especially once you upgrade your broom and you do races. And I'm like, I could not play Quidditch with this. They had the games where you could play Quidditch. I think they even did like a pure Harry Potter Quidditch game.
Yeah, I remember that.
And it was hard. Like, you would fly through these circles and chase the snitch. Wild.
Nice, nice, nice. Well, that is our cast and new members, too. So we're going to take a little break, and when we get back, we're going to dive into the differences between book and movie, and we will be right back.
Hey guys, it's Paul, and the Misfit Faction is looking for your help. We are trying to grow not only our network, but also grow our brands. And the best way to do that is if you guys are looking to start your very own podcast. Maybe you guys have been listening to us for a while. Maybe it's something you guys have always wanted to do, but you're not sure how to get started. If you go to podbean.com/misfitfaction, you guys will get a month of free podcasting on set as a gift from us. So make sure if you guys are looking to start your own show, you reach out to us and go to podbean.com/misfitfaction. Also, maybe you guys have your own online business or service service. You're always looking to grow, and advertising is a very big part of that. If you guys go to sponsorship.podbean.com/misfitfaction, you guys can get $100 worth of free advertising, again, as a thank you from us to you guys. That's sponsorship.podbean.com/misfitfaction.
And we're back. So Paul.
So, Sean.
Why don't you take us down the road of what is different between the book and the movie?
Well, let's first start.
Do we have time for that?
Yes, we do. Okay. We're not going to go over every single one. We're just going to kind of hit our favorites or our most notable ones, mm-hmm. the ones that really kind of make a big difference when you're reading the book versus reading the movie or watching the movie. But I have to start with Dumbledore's reaction to Harry putting his name in the Goblet.
You love that.
Well, Dumbledore's a little strange in this movie. There are some very interesting choices that they make. And I'm going to point out three instances where Dumbledore is very different than he is in the book. The first is obviously, Harry, you put your name on the Goblet of Fire. In the book, he asks very calmly. He's mm-hmm. like, you know, he asks him if he put his name and he's like, no. He's like, okay, I believe you. In this, like, he, like, accosts Harry and is, like, yelling at him. It is stark difference.
It's a factor of the difference in casting between Michael Gambon and Richard Harris. I think the book, even through the whole series, the book is the Richard Harris version of Dumbledore.
Right.
And then the movies, it's like, okay, we're taking Dumbledore and we're keeping the basic bones of Dumbledore, but we're just adding this little extra attitude and just, you know, something's different about him. Here we go.
Yeah. So that's the first scene where you really see it. Then there are two other instances, and it's at the end, Mad-Eye Moody is revealed to be Barty Crouch.
Yeah.
First, when he blows open the door and he walks in and he's like shaking. I was like, in the next movie, he fights Voldemort and he doesn't like show a single sign mm-hmm. of having any sort of like tics or old age or anything like that. But when he's like, it's just a weird thing to me where he's like, all right, just shake him. I wouldn't want him to move like duck. He's going to miss. So that's one. But then there's a scene where when Harry shows that Voldemort used his blood, mm-hmm. Dumbledore gives a look of triumph. Because we find out later on that that's part of what saves Harry at the end. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's all part of Dumbledore's plan. And this is just like, your arm, Harry. And they just look. And he's like, oh, no. So it's very different. So that's, like, one of the big differences. Now, here's another one, Sean.
Oh, here we go.
Sean, do you like house elves?
Not really.
Well, neither does this movie, apparently. Because one of the biggest things is adding Winky the house elf. She serves the Crouch family, and she plays a much bigger role, especially when it comes to the discovery of Barty Crouch and information. But, yeah, so Hermione decides to create an organization in this movie called SPEW, the Society for the Promotion of Elfish Welfare, because she's, like, all up in arms about the fact that, you know, house elves are treated terribly. Now, the only thing about that, I have mixed opinions on this one, because the typical house elves are so happy working at Hogwarts. Like, they're the happiest guys. Dobby's there, and he's like, yeah, I'm having a great time. Mm-hmm. Winky's miserable, and she's getting drunk every night, but she's not there. Like,
she's not even in the movie.
She's not in the movie. She's never mentioned.
I don't think Dobby's in the movie.
Dobby is not in this movie.
I don't like any.
In the book, Dobby was the one that recommended the Gillyweed and stole it for Harry.
That's right.
And in this one, it's Neville, which it works. But I don't know. Do you think that taking out the whole SPEW storyline makes a big difference?
No.
No?
It was just another thing for the book. I think they clearly made a decision that they were going to only stick with the things that had to do with Harry and his journey. Anything that really didn't involve Harry, I think they were like, okay, we can live without this.
Yeah.
And again, I still firmly believe they had to run this by J.K. Rowling.
Yeah, like, she had to be involved in some capacity.
Know, are you okay with us leaving out this storyline? She goes, yeah, because it really doesn't do anything to drive the movies forward. Yes, it's there in the book, because, you know, why not? It's a book. You can put as much as you want into it. You can't do that with the movie.
Yeah. And then, the only time it really matters to me, though, is it's when Ron and Hermione kiss for the first time in the mm-hmm. seventh book is when he mentions, we got to save the house elves. And she's like, make out. And Harry's like, come on, maybe later. So going down, we also apparently in the books, the two visiting schools, Beauxbatons and Shrunk, are not gender inclusive. So they depict these schools as an all boys and an all girls school, respectively. Mm. And in the books, that's not the case.
Yeah, that's right.
Apparently, Nicholas Flamel was a famous alumni of Beauxbatons.
Yeah, they. I don't know if they meant to do this, because they never say it in the movies that it's an all-boys school and an all-girls school. They just never, you never see a male person from Beauxbaton in the movie, or a female, you know, from Durmstrang.
Yeah.
Because it's not the whole school that showed up. It's only
their,
like,
select champions. The people who they think are going to get it.
Are going to get in, so... But
I wish butterflies appeared when I walked into a room, though.
Really?
I love to see them walk.
See, I would love to just show up with, like, whatever.
Oh, the sparky sticks?
Sparky sticks, yeah. Really. I'll take that. The one for me, in the book, I love when he goes and sees the trials. Mm-hmm. And I think there's three of them in the book. And then, obviously, in the movie, they've pretty much condensed it down to one. And the big one is, it's the, you know...
Barty Crouch Jr.
Barty Crouch Jr. It's the whole, you know, torturing... Neville's parents.
Which they do mention in the movie.
They do. And I think Bellatrix Lestrange was in the book. Like,
she's. Not, I don't know if she's in she's the book.
Not
but,
in it, but she's mentioned that she was part of the group
yeah.
that.
Which know, they do tortured. Address in the films later yeah. on.
But again, you know, big difference is just the way that they made the character of Barty Crouch Jr. Like, they didn't hide the fact that he is not a good guy in the movie.
Right.
They kind of dance around it in the book a little, where you're like, oh, maybe, who knows? But then
we can root
end,
for this guy.
We could, but, you know, he seems to be sorry for what he did.
He's so sorry.
Yeah.
Going down, we have the whole dragon trial. It's much shorter in the book.
Oh, yeah.
And it stays confined to that area. The dragon never breaks its chains. Harry still uses his broom, and I feel like they should have gotten involved at some point. There's a lot of damage to the school. But, you know, they can just magic.
Not.
Reparo. You know, but we mentioned Neville is the one that gives the gillyweed to Harry instead of Dobby,
mm-hmm.
which is...
We forgot Moaning Myrtle is the character. You, know, you see her in the second one, but she's another factor in this one.
She is. She's in this movie.
No, that's what I meant. I forgot that she's...
She helps with the egg.
Yeah.
Now, this is one that they don't ever address in any capacity. There's a whole betting thing with the World Cup, where the Weasleys bet that, I think it's Victor Crumb, they bet that Crumb is going to catch the snitch, but they're not going to win the game. And they bet against a guy named Ludo Bagman, and they win.
Mm-hmm.
And he dodges them for the entire book about giving them their money. So
I thought if you catch the snitch, you automatically win the game.
You get 150 points and the game ends. So if you're losing that bad and you catch the snitch, if you don't get there, you don't get it. So... Fred and George get the winnings. Harry gives them the winnings from the Triwizard Tournament. It's like 1,000 galleons or something like that. And that's how they open their joke shop in
that's
the next
right.
movie. Never address it. Ludo Bagman's not even in the film. So the last trial, or the last part of the Triwizard Tournament, is totally different in the books. There's a blast-ended Scroot. There's Boggarts. There's a giant spider. There's a golden mist that turns things upside down. And, of course, there's the Sphinx that asks a question. So that's not in any of this stuff. And it's a maze, and it's kind of alive, and it moves. That's it. So all those
you're just so bummed, dude.
Oh really. My god, so many great things. Come on,
I hear you. I hear you.
It's really sad. We have Rita Skeeter, who during the course of the book, she keeps getting these exclusive things, and like things like, how did she hear this? How did she know this? Turns out she is an unregistered animagus,
mm-hmm.
very similar to the Marauders. But she turns into a beetle, because that's stupid. And so she basically spies on everyone, and Hermione figures it out and traps her in a magic-proof jar that won't shatter, so she can't change back, and basically blackmails her into behaving for a year, just a year, because Hermione doesn't care after that, I guess, and to start writing stories that were fair. Again... It's kind of a shame, and we never hear of her again.
We never do. And that was another thing I was really looking forward to, was the Rita Skeeter aspect of the movie.
Yeah.
I would have liked that.
Barty Crouch in the book gets the Dementor's kiss before he's sent to Azkaban to remain. In the movie, he just gets sent to Azkaban. And in all honesty, that's in the book, it's because Fudge doesn't believe that Voldemort's back. Which they don't address in this movie. They do talk about it,
though. They talk about an Order of the Phoenix in the movie, because you could tell Fudge is just... will not believe that the Voldemort is back.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. There are no blast-ended Scroots. I mentioned that. The Dursleys and all the things that happened to them are basically not in the movie.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah. Dudley on his diet. Yeah. Like all these things.
It was the Weasleys show up to Privet Drive and take him and take Harry away.
I think so, yeah.
And they start off with, obviously, with Tom Riddle's old, like, home and that whole scene, mm-hmm. which I think is actually a really good scene. Very creepy scene.
Oh, yeah. Imagine living there. Jeez. Yeah.
So I actually like the opening to this movie because it really just starts you off in that really, like, oh, this is going to be a bit of a darker movie. And it's also the first movie that was rated PG-13.
Yes.
Which we didn't mention. And all of the rest of them were PG-13 after this. But, you know, so...
The first film adaptation not to begin at Privet Drive. After the opening sequence, Harry awakens at the Burrow on the morning of the Quidditch World Cup, which was cut down. And there's a very awkward jump. Because they couldn't do that much. So technically there was Quidditch in this movie, but not at Hogwarts. Yeah. But those are some of the biggest things. And then a bunch of were shortened down, like we mentioned. The following characters are in the book, but not in the movie. Bill Weasley, Charlie Weasley, Ludo Bagman, Winky, Narcissa Malfoy, and Bertha Jorkins, as well as Dobby. So, yeah, a lot of characters kicked out of here. All of Sirius Black's lines were condensed into a single fireside conversation. The scene with Crouch Jr. being taken back is different. And those are the biggest ones, yeah. And, of course, the dragon one being longer. Favorite scene?
Ooh, I actually like the second Triwizard.
The water one?
The water one.
I think the water one's fun.
Yeah.
My favorite scene is going to be the graveyard scene with him and Voldemort.
That is very good.
It is just...
excellent.
Oh, my God. And as much as I love... Fire. I will always say that is probably my favorite thing.
I will say this, when he makes it back to Hogwarts with Cedric's body.
Oh, it's rough.
That's a tough scene to watch. The music, the father is just...
Oh yeah, he kills it, that guy, Amos Diggory.
It is tough. It's a tough watch. Yeah. It really is. But yeah, I mean, that's really it for Goblet of Fire. I mean, anything else you need to add?
Star
City rating? I'm going to give it 3.5.
I'm going to go with that. I think 3.5 is
a solid movie.
It is a solid movie.
It just gets... It's
hoisted by its own petard.
There you go.
Yep. It is too big for its bridges.
Pretty much.
Or too big for its pages.
And I totally understand why they couldn't do the whole 2-movie thing. And I honestly think if they had done 2 movies, it probably would have been a little too much.
Yeah.
You know, but... you know, it is what it is. You know, you got to do what you got to do.
All right. You want to do Fan Feedback Friday?
We can do Fan Feedback Friday. So, you got it up there.
This week, if you could have any item from a movie or TV show, what would it be and why? We said magic, but some of the answers are not that. Let's see. Thor's hammer that I can wield. Felix's hammer from Wreck-It Ralph. It can fix anything and heal people. The genie's lamp from Aladdin. 3 witches and I get to hang out with Robin Williams. Respect. Mary Poppins' purse. And the glove box defibrillator from Casino Royale, or the guitar case weapons from Desperado.
Ooh.
Yeah. Like fun. Right. So if you guys want to participate in Fan Feedback Friday, it's super duper easy. Just check out our Facebook page, Cinematic Adventures, every Friday between 8 a.m. and 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. There will be a Fan Feedback Friday that you can participate in, like, comment, share, all that stuff. You can find us on all of our other social media also. We are on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, everything. Just type in the Misfit Faction, and odds are you'll find some of our stuff. And of course, we have our website, themisfitfaction.com. There you'll find links to not only this show, but some of our other shows, like the Multiverse Fancast, Podbean Podcast Feature of the Month, and MF Uncensored. Nailed it.
You did. Excellent job.
I need to lay down.
I need to just study you.
That's weird.
Why?
I don't want to be drawn.
You're
like
so good at this.
I don't want to be drawn like one of your French girls, Jack. I got him. Got him. He wasn't ready.
Oh, I hate you so much.
I know you do.
Oh, God. I don't even remember what I was going to say now.
Probably something about ending the show.
Possibly, I guess. I really don't. Now, you really threw me with that.
Order of the Phoenix this week.
Oh, you think Brennan's happy with this episode?
I don't know. I'm sure we'll get a message from Brennan at some point. What did we do? We did our favorite scenes. We did things we didn't like.
We didn't like.
Differences. New cat. I think we're good.
I think we followed Brennan's pattern.
Yeah, blind bat 8719.
There you go, Brennan.
There you go. Hopefully, there's your shout out.
And then hopefully we'll get him on. We'll get him on again for at least one, possibly more of the remaining episodes for this series.
If he's open to it, I don't know.
If he's open to it.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, end the show.
All right. As always, I'm Sean.
And I'm Paul.
And everybody out there, have a great rest of your day.
Watch out for sphinxes and mazes.
And Snape.
Ziz.